Welcome to the Still Mama Tribe podcast with your hosts, Sarah
and Megan.
And you can find us on our links. You should know where we are by now. But I am at Life with Sarah J.
And Megan is at Ayla and Lior on Insta.
And today we are talking to the wonderful Pam. And Pam, just for a little bit of insight, is a very quiet person with a deep love of the natural world. Definitely an introvert. She's born in England and lived and worked until relocating into Scotland in the early 1990s. Whilst getting married on the magical Isle of Skye year before and moved over to Melbourne in 2005.
Pam has worked in pregnancy ultrasound for 3 decades and quickly developed a special interest in supporting people when their scan revealed that things had not gone as expected. She found herself retraining so that she may have some counselling skills to help do her job better. And then she discovered creative arts therapy and followed that path, which has now changed everything. She is able to provide a service specifically for people who experience pregnancy loss. It's her dream job. You can find Pam at Beyond the Silence, which is beyondthesilence.com.au. We'll have all of the links in her show notes. Pam is an absolutely beautiful person and we're so fortunate to be able to interview her, and please go and support her project. She would be so delighted to have anybody on board who wants to participate. Welcome, Pam. Welcome to the Still Mama Tribe. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome, Pam. Thanks. We're so excited. So we know that people are going to get a lot out of everything you're going to say today. So yeah, welcome.
So let's kick off with a little bit of Pam's story. You have a very interesting background that really relates to birth and loss, and the way that you've kind of come to where you are today in your professional life, I think our audience is really going to find interesting and receive a lot of value, because you have worked in this industry for a long time in terms of being a sonographer and the way that you have developed your professional life as well to be able to service women and families who've experienced a loss is really amazing. And I think it's a real testament to your character and the way that you have such a beautiful heart for people who have lost a baby. So if you would like to start a little bit by telling us your story about how you became a sonographer and worked in radiography and sonography for a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So I started off my professional life as a radiographer. Loved that, really enjoyed it. And I was given probably 3-4 weeks as part of my radiography training in ultrasound. And I thought, oh, I like this. But, you know, shelved it, as you do. Enjoyed what I did in radiography and moved down to work in London. I was working in the north of England. And then was lucky enough to move back to my training hospital and be offered a position to train as a sonographer. Perfect. So I trained and was automatically, almost immediately, really interested in the pregnancy side of ultrasound, because it's used for all sorts of other things as well. So pregnancy ultrasound was always my favourite thing to do. And really from quite early on, really the early 90s, I realised that I was more interested in how to break difficult news of things that we didn't expect to happen in a pregnancy to the people it needed to, who needed to hear it. So how could I do that better? And I remember vividly finding myself on a course in London called Do We Use the Right Words? And trying to find out how I could better what I said, how could I do this better, how could I be with people better. And listening to, I think there were probably 3 or 4 ladies in the afternoon who actually had lived experience of pregnancy loss. 2 ladies in particular were talking about miscarriage and what they wanted from a sonographer, which was empathy and honesty and compassion. So that really launched my journey of how can I develop these qualities? How can I be with people? Yeah, so 30 years later, I hope I've developed that. It felt like I had. And I found that over the years, I was getting more and more interested in people's stories, and that little encapsulated half an hour of time to scan was also time to talk. And I found that I was more interested in talking and being with than necessarily doing the job I was supposed to be doing, although I hope I still did that very well. But what happened was when people had a miscarriage, where I worked, we were able to tell people that that's what had happened. And we had a very short space of time to be with people and try and comfort or explore with them the news that they'd just had. And it was so difficult for me as a sonographer to let them go, let them walk out the door, because I'd worry about what happened to them and what happens next. How do people get support? And that stayed with me. And more over time, that's what I wanted to do, was to spend more time in the space of what happens next once you've been given this news. It's very easy to let people go and, oh, you're off to see your GP, or you're going to see your obstetrician, or you're going to see your midwife. But, you know, what's there? What is actually offered? And when people came back again, hopefully lucky enough to have a second pregnancy, you'd remember people and you'd have a conversation. And sometimes that support wasn't there. So part of my journey was doing a counselling master's, which I thought would help me be a better sonographer. I love studying anyway, so I went to do a master's at La Trobe. Loved that, certainly got some really good being with skills. And again, it boosted the, hang on a minute, there's something here about being in the counselling space. And as it says on my website, I met an art therapist while I was at La Trobe. And I was really curious, that's the best word, about what that was like. What was she offering? She had such a gentle presence. And I remember her showing us in some sand with some figurines, which is known as sand tray or sand play. It was a young girl's story and how powerful the imagery was and what, from that conversation that they had, what came out of that. And I was just blown away that this could happen without talking. So having talked myself out of applying to go and do art therapy several times, I actually went to do it. And that was in 2015. And the rest is really history, because I have experience now of what that's like to use art to find out more about an issue or a problem or just living in general. So I know how powerful it is. And I just thought, there's something here about talking. I think when you have a pregnancy loss, there's often no space to talk, and you really need to be heard and be witnessed. So part of what I want to offer is to allow people space to be heard safely and without judgment. But also, sometimes when we talk, we get a bit stuck going round and round the same story, and it doesn't necessarily move always or go anywhere. So to be able to add some art therapy into that, just, it was like a magic, you know, that's the missing piece. I think that's the missing piece for me, and therefore, hang on, that's possibly the missing piece for women and couples. So to be able to offer art making as a way of deepening the conversation, because we know on some level what we need. We know what we need to express, but sometimes we get stuck in how to, and that'll be different for everybody. But what could happen with talking with a pencil, with making a collage, with playing in some sand, with, it goes on and on and on. So that's my story. And unfortunately, I had an injury. It's quite difficult reaching over pregnant mum's bumps for year after year after year. So my arm became very sore, and unfortunately I'm not doing sonography anymore. But I say unfortunately, it's actually given me a big space and time to be able to go, actually, maybe I need to move in this direction now.
That's wonderful. I'm just so in awe of the way that you've brought your gentle nature into your healing space, and you're really allowing so many different avenues to come in to allow women and families to heal. One thing that I am really interested in your story is the way that you have seen opportunities in the spaces that you've been in. For example, when you say that you were in the sonography room and you saw that as not just an opportunity to do your job, which is very easy to
to believe that you kind of show up to work, you do what you get paid to do, and then you leave. You didn't see it that way. You saw it as an opportunity to be present in the room and bring your skills and bring parts of yourself into that room to help make that experience something that I don't want to say is easier, because both Sarah and I have been in that ultrasound room and know exactly what it feels like to receive news that we didn't want to hear, but to bring your compassion and empathy to meet women where they're at is it's really touching and something that's really needed in the industry. So I wondered if you could maybe just talk a little bit about that and about things that you experienced, or maybe if we even have health professionals who are listening, things that you think that can help enhance the compassion and holding space in that room in a gentle, loving way.
Yeah, sure. It's I wonder sometimes if it's allowing ourselves as professionals time to actually step outside the role, maybe in our own free time, and think about what it is that we're doing. Because in that moment when things go wrong, if you haven't given it any thought beforehand, it's very scary. It must be beyond scary for the couple who's hearing that news, but it is scary, and you feel helpless as a health professional, and you go through the, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? If it's possible in training, or even, as I said, step outside, give it some thought in your free time. What does death, what does miscarriage, what does stillbirth mean to me? And reflect on that. And how would I like to be dealt with, handled, cared for, if that was me? And hopefully those two things can get nearer to each other. The professional, I have to do this again in half an hour. I have a waiting room full of people. I have this, this, and this. Just to slow that down and just be, I love your words, present. You know, present with that couple, with that woman. Because for them, I hope this is the only time it will happen. It does happen more than once for some people. But this moment is what's important. And we tend, I think, when we get stressed, to rush. And when we get fearful, we fall back on the very logical, I need to do this and I need to do this. And we forget to be human. So whilst you need to wear your sonography hat, we also need to have, maybe swap it over, or maybe wear them together, the human hat as well. That's what we need. And that's what I'm hearing ladies, couples in this position need. Just slow down, breathe, and be as honest as you can. And you will probably, as a professional, feel helpless, because that's what the other person's feeling. So you're going to pick up on that. There is helplessness in the room. It's okay to be helpless, but you need to be honest as well. And I think letting some of the emotion in, it can be very difficult, because you're going to have to pick yourself back up again once that couple's gone and do the job again. But I think it's okay to show emotion, and I think we're human, we need to let that out. You know, I'm so sorry this has happened, with genuine, I'm so sorry. Not, right, well, I'm sorry, you know, you need to do this and this and away you go. You know, I think that's protective of the professional person. I think perhaps that's putting on a coat of armour, and I get that, because it's painful, but it's much more painful for the person on the receiving end. And hopefully we as professionals will get to go home at 5 o'clock, back to our normal life, whereas the person who's just been given that news, their life's just been turned upside down, that this is a new normal for them.
Mm. Yeah, I know. It's just hit so many things on the head with all of that. And I'm just sort of, it just sort of twinged with me a little bit on the words, I'm sorry, because we know that generally, like, that's always going to be the starter of the conversation.
Yeah.
When people's hearts completely break.
Yeah.
don't know. Do you reckon there's any other way as well? Like if people, so I don't know, if they want to explore other options of maybe how, like what you think of going through everything you've transitioned with and all your counseling and everything you've learned. Because what we always quite, Megan and I discuss a lot is the use of language,
yes,
the use of words and how, not that there's a better situation or better wording in a sense in that space and in that room, but yeah, do you think that there's, from your experience, any other maybe ways for people to communicate? I don't know where I'm going with this, but do you know what I mean? Like, is there any other wording or ways that, yeah, people might better also still communicate with still a lot more empathy?
I see what you mean. So yeah. I guess I was saying the I'm sorry as part of a conversation and yeah, not as a start of the conversation. Is that what you were meaning?
Yeah.
I think for me it was always the slowing down, because just taking one big breath gave me chance to think, okay, I'm just going to just inhabit this space of things are now changing and what do I now say? And I think that's different for everybody. You find your way of words that feel good to you as a professional, personally to you, and hope that they land comfortably for the other. And that will be good sometimes and it will be less good sometimes. And I think that's unavoidable. But I think the taking a breath and just pausing allows some feeling connection in the room. It just allows a moment almost for the bodies in the room to realize there's something going wrong or something going on, I'm sorry. And I think instead of carrying on with what you're doing, in my case, doing the scan, it's a case of turning around and looking at the person. So it's, as a sonographer, you're usually looking at the screen, but actually giving your full attention to the person, the mom next to you, or the couple if there's two people or more. And saying something, I have something to tell you that's going to be hard to hear. I'm trying to think as I'm speaking whether I did use the words I'm sorry, and I actually don't know. But I have something to tell you that is going to be difficult to hear. And what I think that does is to alert the other person, who is probably already alert on some level, but to alert them that something is about to happen, something's about to be said. But it just does them the honour of my full attention to you before you say, I'm so sorry, your baby doesn't have a heartbeat, or whatever else it is that you need to say. It's a moment just to pause. But yes, I hear what you say about the I'm sorry, and and there's definitely something in that about the genuineness. Don't tell somebody you're sorry if you're not sorry.
Yeah. And I think anybody really within that professional space would feel that way anyway, genuinely. I think before you've even said it, you kind of, especially I think as mum, because you're so in tune, everything's heightened. So you kind of feel like you can slice it, that in the energy in the room with a knife.
Yes.
Like it's just, you know that you have this feeling all of a sudden. But I think having, as you said, like allowing that full attention and, you know, letting them know that there is, you know, obviously whatever that, whether it's, the heart stopped or they've had a miscarriage or there are abnormalities with the baby and all these sorts of things. And, you know, which are obviously very, it's super hard conversations as a professional. But in the fact that, allowing that space and that time, I think is so crucial for those parents. And yes, you know that you've got that waiting room and, but that's the next one.
Yes.
And it's like allowing that space, allowing that time with them as much as you possibly can. And then taking that time to step back out of it afterwards to recoup and get yourself back together. Hopefully the next one's a much a happier occasion. But you know, unfortunately it's one of those things that waking up every day, you know, you're not going to have a happy room full of people, couples and mums and coming through the door. It's just not, you know, unfortunately, it's just not reality. So, yeah, and that, you know, can be quite exhausting. I can absolutely, you know, you could see that. But, yeah, I think it's just making sure that the people that you're present with yes. them. I think that's super important, and giving that genuine empathy and, yeah, even just trying to, yeah, put yourself in their shoes for that moment and yeah. be with them like they're your couple, I suppose. Yeah.
I think what gets forgotten as well is that, and it took somebody actually verbalizing it to me. It's really, I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought and it was important.
It's all right. We can come back to it.
Oh yes. I didn't realize, and how much those moments, that hearing the news for the first time, has such a long lasting impact. And I think that's a very important thing to get across to professionals, perhaps particularly sonographers. I don't think we always consider that moment, those few minutes, have such a lasting impact on the couple or the mom. I think we sometimes think, oh, well, it's there and it's gone. Mm-hmm. And it was only when somebody said to me, it may even have been those first couple of ladies that ever spoke about it, it stays with us. The words you use, the way it was done, the atmosphere, all stay with us. Mm-hmm. So if there's anything we can do as professionals to make that easier, make those memories easier when they get replayed again and again,
yeah,
that's so important.
Yeah, yeah. And especially because it's, yeah, and that's so very true, because generally that's the first time you're hearing that something has gone wrong.
Yeah.
That first initial, the baby has died, there's something wrong, you've had a miscarriage, but you know, you have not had that time to process it before, mm. because you don't know until it's come to light through the ultrasound. And I think, I lost my train of thought now too. Yeah, go.
I'll just quickly step in while you try and remember what you were trying to say. What we're talking about here is, I feel, the very beginning of the journey of loss, and how the impact of being in that room can affect the rest of the memories that you form and the way that you play out trying to heal yourself as you remember those things. And it can, I don't want to say make or break the experience, but it really can embed a sense of trauma and trauma or value in the situation as to how that woman or that family feels held in that room. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to acknowledge that sometimes health professionals can also have bad days, and they can have other things going on in their lives, and it's a really difficult job. And the flip side of that, as being a patient, is that this is the day that can either confirm your worst fears, or it can be totally unexpected or earth-shattering for your world to find out that news, and it does affect the trajectory of the rest of your life, the moments that happen in that room. And it's just such a delicate balance for everyone involved. And I think that the things that you've been saying are going to resonate so much. They're already just
and because it even, like, sorry, because I remembered it now, because as you said, like, it's stuff that sort of sits with you. And in that sort of sitting with you, most of the time, the mother is probably going to end up back in that room for another pregnancy, you know, and that pregnancy hopefully will go well, but it's always stepping back, especially into that first, you know, it's taking that, you know, and that's a whole nother trigger. It's a trauma to that mother. And, you know, I've already been in that position a number of times for certain things. And you know, for me so far, like, you know, the balance has been that they've read the files really well and taken care and making sure I haven't been in that same room and all that sort of thing. But, you know, it's still going back. It's still going back through those first, it's still going back into speaking maybe to that same sonographer or the same doctor or whatever. And it's always just, you know, so depending on how that first time went,
first experience,
yeah, and how that sort of then, yeah, plays out subsequently, yeah, from there.
Yeah, and I think you're right, and I'd like to say how generous you are to think about the health professional. And to be honest, I have often been surprised by people leaving after bad news who actually are able to say thank you, and I'm astounded that the space in what's happened for people to say thank you. So I think it's really generous of you to consider the health professional. And you're right, there will be people carry their own experiences, and they do have bad days, and sometimes that isn't a match, and that's going to be uncomfortable, and it's unfortunately that will impact the experience. But I think if we can hold in our mind that what we say and do now for these next few minutes will have an impact, and just have that here so that we can do our best in that moment. Sometimes our best will be extremely good, and sometimes our best will be not so good. And we have to be, as professionals, okay with that, and as people, okay with that. But to really give some consideration to how can we do this to the very best of our ability. Yeah, it's really important.
It's absolutely beautiful. And Oh, I'm just loving this interview so far, and I'm wondering if we'd like to delve a little bit more into your story and talk about where you're at now in terms of Beyond the Silence. So one thing that you have on your website, and one way that you describe what you do, which is absolutely beautiful, is offering a space in which people can be heard and hear themselves. And I wonder if you'd like to explain that a little bit and begin to speak to the service that you offer and talk about how you have this beautiful statement on your website.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I'm so delighted that of all the statements, that's the one that was picked up, because it feels really important to me, and that was my wording, and I'm just delighted. So space to be heard, my understanding, and it's strange to say that in a room with two people who've suffered a loss, is a lack of witnessing of the loss, a lack of space to be able to talk about what's happened, because it's difficult in society anyway. We don't talk about death easily. I think we try and deny death as much as we possibly can, especially around medicine, because medicine can do everything. So yeah, we don't want to talk about death. So when death and life come together, or life and death come together in the same space, it's almost doubly difficult. And people generally, society generally, doesn't want to go there. And you guys have got your own stories about who will listen and who won't listen, and how safe you feel to share. So I really wanted to offer a space for people to be heard, so that they can actually give voice to their story without any judgment, and have somebody really listen to them and acknowledge what's happened and be a witness to that story. So hopefully people have family members and friends and wonderful online communities that they can now share. But I think there is some value in sharing in a one-to-one or couple-to-one space, and being able to have somebody really pay attention. Again, it's being present to that story. So I wanted people to have a space that they could speak about whatever it is that they need to speak about, so that they could be heard. And where hearing yourself comes in is, if you can listen to your own words, that's a gift, because somebody isn't trying to jump in. Ah, yes, but, or, well, have you tried, and maybe we can fix, and there's a solution, because there isn't anything that anybody can do apart from give you space. So have somebody honestly listen without an agenda, and without, but I just need to chip in with this piece of information. So just leaving it open. And the other part of hearing yourself is where I think the art therapy comes in, which is, we pay so much privilege to our spoken language, and we always think with our heads. But actually, my understanding is that our body and our heart and our whole being knows much more, but it doesn't usually have a voice. It doesn't usually have a way of expressing itself. So to be able to offer, again, we're back to pencils and paintbrushes and collage. Can we represent this experience in some way? Can you show me with a gesture or a different sound to words or on a piece of paper an image that captures what this is like? That's another way for you to listen to yourself. So it's a way for you to hear much more about what's going on with arms that are empty or a heart that's broken. Can we pay attention for a little while to that so that you get a fuller understanding of what that loss, what that experience means to you?
That is just so beautiful. And I can tell that you're just so passionate about this. The space is just lighting up with the way that you bring so much joy. And actually, just I'm going to go off on a little digression here. We were just talking about how it can be hard to describe how passionate we feel to be in this space, and how Sarah and I, we often say, "Oh, this was amazing," and we're so excited about creating this podcast. And I think that I'd just like to say that it's okay to feel really joyful and privileged, and to have the duality of the life and the death in this space. And coming back to what you said was so lovely about how society doesn't want to believe that life and death can exist in the same space, but we all know that it can.
Yeah.
And coming to terms with that, I believe, is a big part of healing. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that in terms of creative art therapy. I know how much you have brought to that space to help integrate those things. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about maybe something that people could do at home if they'd like to practice a ritual to help themselves heal, or something that you offer in your services as well.
Yeah, it's such a personal thing. And I also wonder if some of what I can do for people is just simply to give permission that what feels right to you on some level is almost certainly the right thing to do. So, I mean, something very simple. We've got the beautiful crystals in front of us. If you want to pick something that represents that love or your baby or something that you can hold and touch, if that feels right for you, that could be on display so that you're not, I'm thinking particularly as I'm speaking about miscarriage, where often there isn't anything tangible that's left behind after the loss of the little one. So I wondered about people being able to make a memory book, which I'm hoping perhaps for stillborn babies, we have the beautiful handprints and footprints, maybe a wristband from the hospital and locks of hair, and how difficult that must be to put the book together, but how wonderful to have that as a memory. And I wondered if permission could be given for mums to do that for losses that are much earlier on. So could you record in a book, you know, what you hoped for that baby? Has your baby got a name that you could write down? And having, you know, permission to do this, because it possibly seems strange, I want to say, to the outside world, to the, other than the tribe, to want to do this. Why would you want to do this? That's not okay. It's not done. But why not? You know, why can't you make a book of memories for that pregnancy, which takes a lot of work? So maybe having somebody with you to support you through that journey is great. But really simple things, lighting a candle each night and just being with the candle, almost like a meditation for even 2 minutes. You know, something simple. Flowers. Could you have a vase of flowers that are changed weekly? This is a place that I put flowers for this little person. And even having I use the word altar carefully because it has religious connotations, but we can make a little space that's sacred to us. It could be a place in the hall, it could be on the mantel shelf, it could be on a bedside table, with a little display, you know, a crystal or a shell, something that means something to you. And if you think about it, you probably know what that is or could have ideas. It doesn't need to be static. It could change as well. But how lovely to have a small display, a shelf and a vase of flowers. You know what that means. And you might want to share that with somebody. But it's okay if you don't, because it's not overt. It's simple. And if you want something overt, if you want a picture with your baby's name on it somewhere precious, somewhere special to you, why not? There's no problem with doing that. So there's a big range of things. It feels like it's just giving people permission to find out what that is for them.
That's right. And I think that's really important. And I think the support around that is really important too, because, it can, once again, we know that people feel so alone when they're sort of a part of this community. To then, if you want to be able to do your own little ritual or your little altar or whatever it is, like we call our little bookshelf thing that we have all of Axel's stuff on, we call it his bedroom.
Oh.
So because, we're like, he doesn't have a bedroom. So, that's what we classify as his bedroom, because obviously his ashes sit there, but all of the things that were intended for him.
Yeah.
As well, or whether Arthur finds a shell on the beach and things like that, so he brings it back and puts it on there, or feathers and crystals and all sorts of stuff. But it's something that I think you should never need permission to do. And if it feels right for you, hopefully you don't ever feel that somebody else makes you feel like you shouldn't be able to do these things. And I know that my husband, especially at the start, was kind of a bit like, oh, he wasn't sure. I guess was like, well, this is what I want to do, so I don't care what you think. And in the end, he was very happy and he was grateful for all of that, because, that gives, it's something whether he walks past it for the day, or I might even do that now. It's still somewhere for us to walk past in the hallway between our two bedrooms that, you might take that second to just say good morning or good night or things like that. So I think it's really nice. And, and I just think whatever gestation it happens, or even, after the baby has died, if they have obviously lived a little while as well, you allow that space in whatever works best for you, which I think is really, really lovely.
And it's not as if you don't remember the little one daily, probably more than once a day, but it's having a living connection. That's maybe the wrong choice of words, but it's a real place that, as you say, as you walk past, it's there in your consciousness again, and it's bringing the little one into your life permanently.
And that's it, because and as I think we were walking the other day with Arthur's auntie, Tim's sister, and Arthur just brought him up.
Yeah.
And it was really, really cute. And, he's just like, and Axel's everywhere.
Yeah.
And then Laura was like, her moments. And she's like, she's like, I feel him all the time. And Arthur's like, yeah, he's in my heart all the time.
Oh.
And it's just for a 4-year-old, it's very special. And, he's so interconnected with it, on a level that not many people would understand. So, it's just nice to, have that, whatever, maybe sometimes physical things you need for yourself. But, some people also don't need that. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it really is very personal. It's what feels right. I'm sitting looking at a cushion, and there's something, again, about holding something soft. And, is there a special cushion that you can gather to you and, have some contact with?
And I know that there's some people, I've seen them, I think mainly on Facebook and stuff, where they actually make the dolls to the weight of what the baby was of gestation and things like that, and I think they're quite special too. I mean, I haven't got one, but I know that they're around. But yeah, it's just those little things, and you know what? Once again, it comes back to what feels right for you.
And I think that it represents bringing the metaphysical and the emotional reality that we experience into a physical and tangible way. And from looking at your website, Pam, that's exactly what creative arts therapy does.
Yes.
And it's that mind, body, and spirit link that helps to have something outside of yourself that you are able to see and to feel and to touch and to help you communicate your story. So I wondered if you'd like to talk a little bit to some of the benefits of creative arts therapy and the way that you have seen that bring healing and enable women.
There's quite a lot of neuroscience research about the benefits of art making. Certainly just being involved in the making of creative arts has a calming and soothing effect. It sort of puts you into a more reflective space. So there's definite, they've done lots of wonderful studies about how calm you can feel and how levels of cortisol and, you know, tough science stuff change as you get really involved in the process. There's also, probably read from the website, art can reach parts of the brain that are not verbal. So when we're talking and speaking and thinking, we're only reaching certain parts of the brain, whereas if we can make something using imagery or different sounds or, you know, body movement, that gives other parts of the brain a voice. So we're actually, the reverse is reaching those parts as well and bringing their knowing into the sphere in front of us. So yes, it's very useful for, as I said, calming and relaxing. I'm losing my train of thought again. It allows for things to be made tangible and to express more of us, more holistically.
I think that that's so beautiful and so important in this space, because it, especially specifically the space of baby loss, is quite underserviced. And Pam, you and I were talking about this before we started recording, that this space doesn't have sometimes the resources or the nurturing space holders that other spaces of grief can have. So I wondered if you would like to speak a little bit about your experience of moving into creating Beyond the Silence.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey. Because of my injury, I have been given space to do that. So it's strange how things come together at certain points in time to, you know, finish a master's degree in creative arts therapy, have an injury which was not good, really bad. But then that's given me space to be able to put this together. So to be able to really sit and reflect on what might be needed in that space and to gather those materials together with an eye on how different human beings are and how different they might want to use materials. And I have a feeling that the service will really evolve as people use it. So I have some ideas, as I said, maybe journal making or this sort of watercolor or this acrylic paint or this pastel, but other people might have really different ideas. And well, no, I really want to do huge pictures on charcoal, or no, I want to walk outside and collect things from nature. And I really think that this will be evolving as people use the service, so that it can bend with them and be flexible with them. But it's having a range of materials that might appeal to people, because it's quite nebulous trying to describe art therapy, because we're back to using words. And really, the art therapy is more than words or different to words. So I always find it hard to describe in words something that is, you can see I'm waving my arms about as I'm speaking, to do it, you can drop into it, and the art therapy can even change your mood. Alters all sorts of things within your brain. It's also able to be quite useful in the treatment of trauma as well. But having a safe space was important, somewhere that was set up ready to have people come into. offering them a choice of what they might like to do. And I still wonder if a lot of what people want to do, at least for a first appointment, would be talk. And it's allowing people to do what they need to do, but also not let people get completely stuck telling the same thing again and again and again, trying to bring it back to the present moment, what's happening right now for you as you're telling your story. So hopefully the space is going to offer all of those possibilities. And again, it's back to being present with that person. What does that person need right now? And if you know what you need, that's great. If you don't know what you need, well, let's try and explore together what that might be. I'm very conscious of not wanting this to be a body of expert knowledge and a person. What it needs to be to work is two people in relationship. So, you know, can I walk along beside you because I don't have your answers? I can have some suggestions about how you might get to your answers, but I don't have those for you. So in my space, how might we use that space? How might we walk together so that you get what you need? And if you would like to write a poem about your baby, there's a pen and a paper. If you need to sit and cry, that's okay. There's a box of tissues. If you want to find some pictures from a magazine and make a collage about what that experience of the moment of loss was like for you, we can do that. Whatever it is that you need to do, hopefully there's an art making capacity that will fit with what you want.
That's great. So good. Like, as you know, it's something that shows that, you know, it's not just a one thing, because we know that not one thing works for everybody in every factor of life. But obviously what we've, you know, discussed quite a lot is that generally it's always the male partner that has the hardest way with words and their feelings with everything, and because they're the ones that have to be the strong one and all that sort of stuff. So how have you sort of found them and the experience for you know, a male partner, the dad in the situation, for them to heal, and what sort of has been such a good benefit for them that they can get out of it? Because, you know, I know that it's probably, you know, it would be, you know, quite easy for the mum to walk into that space, because generally we're quite open to opening ourselves up to any type of healing possible, whereas guys will just want to sort of generally shut away and just move on, not deal with that. But we know that also has its negative impacts, especially later on in life. So how trying to sort of weave them into that space to help them heal and find their arty healing guide, I suppose, in a sense.
I guess it'll come back down to making an offer about what it is that they would like at that moment. And yes, it's, I suppose, asking people to walk through the door might be the biggest problem. It would depend, I think, whether people came as a couple or as two individuals, and that there's probably benefits to both things. So sometimes perhaps coming as an individual man would give you space where there isn't, you don't have to be a support, but you can actually be supported. It's probably not an easy space to step straight into, and it might be more of a time, you know, coming back. So that you can build up a trusting relationship, and if you feel to begin to share what that was like for you, I think that would be a good thing to do. But there is definitely an element of trust in any sort of counselling relationship, any helping relationship. So it's, I would hope, a case of meeting and finding whether, I'm talking about me and them, is a good fit, and whether we feel that we could work together. But I'm hoping that making an offer of come and see what's possible, and that might not be enough. It might be too left field for people, and I get that. But although men will say they're not creative, a lot of people actually are. And it might be a case of tapping into what the creativity is for them. But I also wonder, as I said, whether it's offering a space that's safe for them to occupy as they need to. And just, can you sit in silence for 10 minutes without somebody interrupting, so that you're with your own thoughts? So meeting them where they are. But yes, I hear you. I'm not sure how easy it will be to get people through the door.
Yeah. Pam, this has just been such a delightful interview. Thank you so much for coming out and sharing.
Thank you.
Your passion and your project with us. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about before we wrap up today?
I don't think so. I think I'll jump back in my car and think of 100 things that I should have said or would have liked to have said. But I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to talk about the benefits of art therapy and a little bit about sonography as well. It's been really interesting. So, it's a new service being offered, and I'm hoping that people can come and make of it what they will. And just one of many, I think one of people will find what's right for them, whether that's an online community or a face-to-face meeting. There's definitely something about relationship with somebody that is an offer that might be really important for some people. And I think if you're curious, give it a try.
Give it a go. And we will link all of your website and where people can find you in the show notes. Your organization is called Beyond the Silence. And Pam, it has just been so beautiful. You're just an absolutely gorgeous human being, so gentle and compassionate. And I'm so grateful that you're in this space to offer this service.
Thank
to
you.
Help heal mamas and families. We are truly honored to have shared this space.
Yeah, and you've got such, obviously, and you know what people can hear just from the way you speak, you know, such a beautiful, gentle nature, which makes, you know, it perfect for what you do and where you've sort of evolved into. Because yeah, it takes a special person to do that, and being able to hold this space for people that have had such, you know, a terrible loss, you know, in their life. So I think it's, you know, it's a testament to who you are and where you sit today, which is beautiful, and what you're doing. And yeah, we're really grateful to have you. And and even just the name of you know, Beyond the Silence, like, it's such a amazing name, like, because, you know, that's where we know that the silence is the hardest part, and yeah, there, you know, there is so much to it. So yeah, I think you've done amazingly, so thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Can't wait for people to get in touch with you and learn a little bit more about you.
Yeah, and I think everyone will get a lot out of your episode and everything you've said with us today. So whether that be a mama of loss, or your you know, a supportive friend, or definitely the medical industry as well, so the professionals. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. The information provided on the Still Mama Tribe is for educational and informational purposes only. The information is not a substitute for professional advice or care. Please seek the advice of a qualified healthcare professional in the event that something you learn here raises questions or concerns for your health. Also, if you require support regarding your loss, SANS Australia has a national support line 24 hours a day. The number is 1300 072 637. Also, see our website for further resources and links for support.
Today's episode is sponsored by Memories of an Angel. Now, Memories of an Angel is a social enterprise created by Melbourne-based bereaved mother Samantha Rowe. Samantha created Memories of an Angel in 2016 following a string of personal losses, which led her to discover that there was a lack of pregnancy and infant loss awareness keepsake locally available for bereaved women and families in Australia.
Now, Sam is a beautiful mama, and we know her personally and absolutely love her. She has done amazing things for the lost community. She's incredibly active. She has a beautiful Facebook community where people can join and contribute. And most of all, she also fearlessly shares her journey with people, I think, in such a brave and courageous way. And so what Sam offers through Memory of an Angel is pregnancy and infant loss awareness ribbons, wristbands, pins, jewelry, ornaments, and a whole heap of other things. Check out her website. It's absolutely beautiful if you want to buy something for yourself or a friend to remember your baby. You can find Memories of an Angel on both Facebook and Instagram, and check out the show notes for her special offer.